Tristan, first of all, your reaction to that extraordinary interview I just finished with your brother.
I think that was one of the best interviews ever conducted with Andrew. I don't know how hard you're going to go on me, so perhaps I'm making a mistake saying this. I like how you challenge your guests. I like how you seem to have a very impartial opinion on people. You don't judge things one way or another before you go into the interviews. And I think that made the interview with Andrew very interesting. I'm very excited to see the public response.
I mean, like I said to him, I'm not here to convict you or otherwise. I don't know if you're guilty or not of the charges laid against you. We'll establish that in a trial or otherwise. I mean, it may not even go to trial.
No, it might not.
I mean, it seems to me there's been an interesting relaxing of restrictions against you and your brother, really, from the time you were put in prison at the start of the year. What do you read into that?
Well, if you understand how the Romanian justice system works, again, I have to be very careful what I say. The pressure to put us in jail comes from not organizations. There are many great people who work at organizations like DCOT, which is the organization investigating us, but it comes from individual prosecutors who I am very much a trophy for, I would say. So the absolute obsession with putting me in jail comes from these people, but these people have nothing to do with judges, you see. At the end of the day, if you investigate me for a year and a half, throw me in jail, drag my name through the mud, eventually you're going to have to come up with a file of evidence and show it to a judge. So the people who keep letting me go are the people who've seen that file of evidence and don't have a motivation to keep me in jail. So that's it broken down as simply as I can.
In the BBC report of the prosecution files, they quote you as saying about the women who worked on your webcam business, "I'm going to slave these bitches. I'm going to make them work even more hours and hours and hours. I work these bitches like slaves, slave work, minimum 10 or 12 hours a day."
That is not true at all. So
you never said that?
No.
Or you said it sarcastically?
No, I didn't say it sarcastically at all. That is about my ex-girlfriend cleaning my house. So what you have to understand is when you go through a man's phone, you have 4 years and hundreds of thousands, millions of messages to everyone he's ever spoken to. Now, this is about human trafficking, my accusation. So anyone coerced, anyone forced, anyone tied up, anyone kidnapped, anyone sold, anyone moved, none of that is in any of my WhatsApp conversations. But DCOT and the prosecutor essentially can eliminate parts of the conversation that he says are not relevant. Now, if you look at the timings between the messages on all of these conversations that look very bad, he's deleting various things, a lot of LOLs and a lot of ha-has, because believe me, if you were to read mine and my brother's conversations, even right now, you could probably accuse me of conspiracy to commit murder because of the stupid things that we talk about. I was talking
conspiracy
about...
Conspiracy to commit murder?
I mean, Andrew, I'm going to kill you when I get home. Like, things like this, which can be used, you know, in a very negative way.
But now, do you accept you've used language about women?
Oh, loads. I've used worse language.
But how do you feel about that? Now, it's all been laid bare.
Well, it's very unfortunate that I think this conversation is 3 years old. I think our house was messy after a party, and I was saying, oh, yeah, she's my slave. Don't worry, I'll get her working.
Do you regret using language like that?
No, I don't, because...
Really?
Well, last week, my daughter's mother sent me a photo of her drawing on the wall with crayons. And I said, ha ha ha, I'm going to kill her when I get home. Now, you could delete the ha 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 because you feel that's irrelevant because you're the prosecutor. And you can arrest me and all my friends and throw me in jail for conspiracy to commit the murder of children. You could do that if you wish.
That's not the way I meant it. No, but I'd ask a different question.
Yes.
I would say when your daughter grows up,
yes,
how would you like it if another man spoke about your daughter by saying, I'm going to slave the bitch, I'm going to make her work even more hours and hours, I work this bitch like a slave. If someone said that and you saw it actually in a message they sent about your daughter, how would you feel?
Well, that's not the best message to have sent. And, you know, there's lots of locker
room
talk. I regret that.
You either regret it or you don't.
I don't. I regret that it became public because, you know, the way men speak to each other, if I were to go through all of your WhatsApp messages, I don't know what I'd find. And
you wouldn't mind if a man spoke that way about your daughter when she's older, you wouldn't mind? Or you would mind?
Of course I would mind, but it depends on the context of the relationship.
Do you think it's disrespectful?
The girl I was talking about cleaning my house at the time, I'm no longer with her. And also, this conversation is not about anyone who's listed as a victim in the file, which is a very important distinction to make. The girl I was talking about, I was very in love with at the time. I had a very great relationship with at the time. You know, if you say to your girlfriend, oh, come here, I'm going to spank you, that's not, you know, if you're her co-worker or you're a man who's stalking her, it's a very different context to if you're her boyfriend.
The problem is that in the context of what you've been accused
of... Yes, the prosecutor can make it look bad.
This looks damning.
Of course, but what he doesn't do is he doesn't show the whole conversations to any judge. That is a carefully manipulated and edited and actually constructed conversation, as all of the conversations are.
This whole lover boy thing, right? The suggestion is that you and Andrew, basically, you're two good-looking, fast-talking, smart guys, right? And you have plenty of money and you've enjoyed yourselves, fine.
Yes.
And that you've managed to deliberately or otherwise, but the suggestion is deliberately, persuade a lot of women to fall in love with you very quickly, and then you use that relationship and how they feel about you to then guide them towards making money from webcams.
Well, that's interesting. Of the seven women that you've listed, none of which we can name, do you know how many of them ever worked at my old webcamming business I had many years ago? Of the seven victims listed, how many of them were in any way related to any of the activities I did when I ran a webcam studio? The answer, Piers, you'd be surprised to know, is zero. People on the internet, I call them Twitter detectives. Not the police, not DCOT, not even this overambitious prosecutor, because there are webcam studios all over the city, has tried to make any criminal complaint about that small business that me and Andrew, as he said, dipped our toe in. I was mainly running it, to be fair, all those years ago. None of these people who are our alleged victims today have anything to do with the webcam studio. But if you watch clips on Twitter when we speak as a 24-year-old, vulgarly, oh yeah, you know, I'm pimping because I'm in the club with a bunch of girls. You know, when we speak that way, it's easy to say, oh look, he's admitted, he's confessed to his crimes. The old webcam studio and the current investigation have zero strings in between them. So the question in and of itself doesn't make sense, if you understand that.
You could face further time in jail if you're convicted
Yes.
of these offences, a long time in jail. You were in jail earlier this year. What was that experience like for you?
Jail was, you know, when you're going through something really difficult and it's almost unbearable, whether it be a difficult gym session or, you know, a major setback, and you come out after it's finished. And the moment it ends, you're like, yeah, I'm glad that happened. Jail was hell every single day. But the moment we got that phone call saying a judge who's now seen the evidence that they've allegedly raised against you has decided to release you, I was very happy for the experience. I'm very happy I spent 3 months living in those conditions.
What did you find out about yourself?
I didn't find out anything new. I feel like it was my opportunity to show to myself and to my brother and to the world that I am the man who I say I am. I always preach being mentally strong, physically strong. You know, I put on this tough guy persona, but I don't think it's a tough guy persona, because if I can survive 3 months in a Romanian prison without incident, without tears, without being upset.
You didn't shed any tears?
I did not in jail.
Did you know that Andrew had?
I believe that Andrew's tears were tears of anger. He was more angry than I was. Whereas me and Andrew are very balanced. We have a very balanced relationship. We keep each other in check. When he's angry, I calm him down. When I'm angry, he calms me down. I believe Andrew was a lot angrier at the situation. Andrew knew a lot less about the situation. I can at least read some Romanian. I was trying to make sense of it all. He was sitting there in pure frustration.
But these are serious criminal charges.
Well, they're serious criminal charges. But what I would say to you is, what is the serious criminal evidence? So again, this is from the, I'm going to work this for hours. It's about a girl cleaning my house, by the way. So this is the big bombshell, the BBC, because I don't know how they got the indictment, but the indictment should be private. I'd love to give you a copy. I really would. But the criminal indictment isn't what the prosecutor says I've done. It's the evidence against me. So if the BBC have read their grubby little fingers through all of this evidence and all the files, and the worst thing they have to come at me with is, ah, Tristan, you said this girl's your slave. I've said that. I've said worse things.
Have you ever coerced women?
No, I've never coerced anybody into doing anything they don't like.
Do you accept them, as I said to Andrew, that some of the language, even in the things he tweets now, suggests that his idea of how women should be treated is that they effectively are a form of slave to a man?
You know, Piers, I really like you, and I sometimes feel you fall for Andrew's little traps, and it's really wonderful to watch, because it's not the things he says. It's the way he says them, and the way he says them can get people very riled up. When I was sitting listening to your interview about women shouldn't work and be taken care of, etc., it actually took me back about 12 or 13 years to an interview I saw, I can't remember, I think it was on ITV, with the late Christopher Hitchens. You probably knew him.
I did.
I did not know Christopher Hitchens. I think he died way before I became relevant. But he was sitting there with this female journalist, and he's saying, his exact words were, oh, I don't want Mrs. Hitchens to be coarsened in the labor market. Why would I want my women coarsened in the labor market? No, if she's with me, she can work if she wants, but she doesn't have to. Now, he was not labeled the world's biggest misogynist. He was actually hailed as an intellectual in his time. I read all of his books. I used to be a big fan of his. But he said exactly the same thing Andrew said. Exactly the same thing, with different intonations and different tones. And you probably knew him. You didn't attack him back then for saying that, did you?
But Andrew, well, I'm not here to judge.
He could get people riled up.
Christopher Hitchens is no longer with us, sadly. He was a brilliant man in many ways. I disagree with him about many things, but he's not why I'm here, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
you know, it just seems to me that the rhetoric, particularly by Andrew, but also some of the stuff they found with you, the sure. way that you talk about women may be part of the problem you found yourselves in here. And from Andrew's recent tweeting, there's no sign to me that he is aware or self-aware of quite how some of this stuff comes over.
I understand.
And that maybe that has been part of the problem here with you guys.
Well, again, when you look at Andrew Tate and Tristan Tate and you try to label them misogynists, you gender the argument. If I were accused of anything else and they were to read the conversations, which they did read, by the way, between me and my friends, the insults we give each other, the threats we make to
each
other.
Do you think a woman's place is at home serving her man?
No. I believe my woman's place is at home serving her family. I serve my family.
But she shouldn't go to work.
She wouldn't have to if she didn't want to. If I wanted her to and she wanted to and we agreed
if
as a
If you wanted her to.
If we agreed as a family.
What if you don't want her to but she does?
Well, in the same way that if I was working a normal job and I got a promotion, that would mean that I move out of the city or we move as a family, we'd sit there and discuss it as a family. I don't believe that there's one rule for every single family. I don't see...
Yeah, but Andrew does.
I don't see in the future my woman working, no, because I think I could take care of my woman and I could take care of my family.
You wouldn't be... I don't think you'd be with a woman who wanted to work, right?
I've been with women who worked.
And how did that go?
Wonderfully. I've had some absolutely wonderful relationships.
Well, doesn't that prove the point that this whole idea a woman has to stay at home and serve her man is actually a lot of cobblers?
Again, I don't think serve her man was something Andrew specifically said. I would phrase
it. Well, he did. I mean, that's why I read that whole tweet.
Well, Andrew's not me and I'm not Andrew. What I would say is a woman serves her family.
Are you different in your outlook on that?
Me and Andrew are very different. Me and Andrew are very different people.
Rolling Stone, in a profile, said this about
Rolling Stone.
Their relationship dynamic is very odd. It's like Tristan is held captive by Andrew and believes or follows everything Andrew says or does.
I don't believe or follow a lot of things that Andrew says or does. You know, I get asked every single day to counter. EJ Dickinson is this woman's name. I could tell you some horrible stories about the people who she's harassed and bothered, this Rolling Stone woman. The things Andrew says and does, I mean, I get asked...
What don't you like about his views?
Well, the major one, when people say, oh, Tristan, now that you've converted to Islam, I'm like, I haven't converted to Islam. Mm. Who says I converted to Islam? No, I'm an Orthodox Christian and I have not converted to Islam.
What do you think of his conversion?
I think that it's not my place to even comment on it. Now, some of the greatest religious discussions I have had have been with Andrew since his reversion, since him reading the Quran, most of it of which he covered in prison. And we sit there and discuss these various ideas, but I believe that individual religious conviction is exactly that. It's individual. And I don't believe whether I'm his brother, whether I'm his son, mother, uncle, I have no place to tell him what his religious conviction should be, just as he has no business to tell me mine. So I'm happy for him because he's become a happier and better person.
Are you rivals?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But in the best and most healthy way. I can't watch him train in the gym for an hour in the morning and then not train for an hour myself. I can't sit there drinking and relaxing and partying while he's on his laptop working.
Do you ever fight?
No, never. We never argue.
You never physically fight?
Well, we used to physically fight all the time. We're both professional athletes, so we used to beat each other up in the ring for sparring.
Who would win?
Oh, Andrew would win. I was good. I was the European champion at my peak, but Andrew was built for Andrews. I mean, see my broken nose? It leans this way. First time it was broken was by him, and it got weaker after that, and I had it broken twice subsequently in kickboxing matches. But yeah, we are rivals in the way that we inspire each other to work better and to be better, but not rivals in any way that his success would upset me or my success would upset him.
When you were in jail together,
yes.
So for a period of that 3 months, you were actually in the same cell, I think.
Indeed, for about half of it.
What did you talk about when it's just you and him and you're thinking, we may never get out of here?
Lots of things. Books, religion, the case, obviously, explaining, trying to understand.
When you're in a cockroach-infested tiny cell together.
Yes.
You've gone from being the top G and his brother with your Bugattis, your cigars, the lifestyle, the women, and so on, to literally nothing in a very degrading environment
yes.
that you find yourself in. Mm-hmm. And you've got no idea how this plays out or how it ends, or even if you get out. I mean, that's a big moment.
Yeah, I guess it is a big moment, but I always knew that we were going to be okay. You know, even when I was separate from him, I wasn't worried that he was banging his head against the wall or self-harming or doing anything stupid. Again, he wasn't worried about me. We obviously weren't worried that the other brother, and I know you can't share in this conviction, I know he's not a criminal. I know he has no skeletons in his closet and no criminal past. He knows exactly the same about me. So we were very relaxed. I guess in jail, I was more relaxed than I am now, because in prison, I assumed that the prosecutor, whose job by the Romanian constitution, by the way, he's not a district attorney like in the United States, where he is told he has to argue that you're guilty and that's it. The prosecutor's job actually here is to discern the truth of the situation. So I was sitting in jail relatively relaxing. Well, this is going to end any day now. I mean, human trafficking, this is stupid. It's not going to happen. Like, they're not going to sentence me to jail for this. It was only when I got out that I learned the true motivations behind this that made me actually more worried than I was in jail. So in jail, I was relatively relaxed. Trained every day, ate their horrible food, did my push-ups. It was all right. Mental break, no electronics.
Did your mother, was she able to come and see you or not?
No. No, in fact...
Could you speak to her?
For some reason, and I cannot tell you why, I was banned from visitors. That includes my daughter, the mother of my daughter. That includes any friends.
Was Andrew as well?
I don't believe so, but no one tried to visit him. Maybe they were rejected at the prison gate. I don't know, but I was, at one point, it's on file, it's on paperwork, but at one point I was banned from receiving visitors.
Could you make calls?
Yeah, there was some phone time, but I didn't make a single call while I was in prison. I spent 3 months without speaking to anybody.
Other than Andrew?
No, only my lawyer, actually. Only my lawyer.
And did you get into similar physical threatening situations that he did?
No, I mean, Andrew had like a few Mexican standoffs, let's say, but I think that jail is the world of realities and, you know, lots of tough guys, whether they be Romanian or British or American. Nowadays, the tough guy move is, you've offended me, I'm going to use my phone. I'm going to call the boys and the boys are going to come beat you up. I think that that is the standard operating procedure in lots of the world. I mean, as Andrew said, I come from a council state. I understand this very well. When you walk into a prison cell, that's not the reality. The reality is if I start a fight with this guy, it may be 10 to 15 minutes before anyone shows up. And I'm a 6'4", 17 and a half stone former kickboxer. Everyone knows me. Everyone knows I'm a professional athlete. So I actually didn't have any problems at all. I would say that everyone was very kind and very respectful to me. Not just because they were intimidated by me. No, absolutely not. Because there were some guys in there who I should have been intimidated by. But I give respect and I think I receive it back. And I did okay in that environment.
People often say, and it's certainly true from people I've interviewed over the years, that you're a product of your environment, particularly of your parents.
Yes.
In a November 2011 Facebook post, your father, Emery, wrote that the eternal problem of the alpha male was protecting his flock of women. He said, "But times I struck a woman, brackets, in passion, I never left a mark, no trace, hyper control, super control of a human animal. They love me still."
I've never heard that before in my life. I'm smiling, man, because I can imagine his voice saying it.
You can.
I can imagine his voice saying it. "The only times I've struck a woman, in brackets, in passion." Have you ever struck a woman in passion, Pierce?
No.
You haven't?
No.
Not a little spank?
Well,
not once?
Let's keep this above board. But
I want to, Pierce, but I'm saying, like, I understand how you're trying to phrase this.
No, I don't
and
understand.
And again, my father is dead and can't defend himself.
I'm not trying to phrase it in any way. I'm just curious what you think he meant by that.
I honestly don't know. I mean, keep in mind, my father died when I was 27, and that post was written a long time ago. I've never heard it before. I've never seen it before.
But what kind of father was he, in terms of the values he instilled in you and Andrew?
Oh, he was a wonderful man, and he was a very protective man over his family and the people he cared about. I mean, they got divorced many, many years ago, but even with his dying breath, he would have jumped in to fight 10 men to defend my mother and her honor. That's the kind of guy he was, super protective and super, you know, involved in everyone he loves life, even if he was far away. You know, the phone calls were constant, the emails were constant. And he held us very accountable as young men.
Andrew tweeted last year, "My dad was a chess genius, CIA operative. My mother was a dinner lady. They had nothing in common. Dad said she fed you boys healthy meals every day, cleaned the house, and was largely quiet. I loved her very much. That's literally all men want."
Are you asking if that's an accurate description of my parents' relationship?
Yeah.
Perhaps, yeah. But my mother was a wonderful mother. See, I don't think...
But they split up.
Of course they did, but that doesn't...
Well, so when he says, that's literally all men want.
They split up way before I was old enough to understand marriage or sexual or male or female dynamics, by the way. So I can't even comment on their marriage. What I can comment on is how they were as parents. And what I will say is, I don't look back on my childhood, raised in a council estate, on state benefits, you know, free school lunches. I don't look back on that and think, oh, my mother was a terrible mother because we didn't have any money. Because I don't think it was my mother's job to, I guess, provide as much as my father was doing his best from the United States. But I will look back and say my mother was an absolutely wonderful mother. I had 3 square meals a day. She knew how to manage her finances, didn't smoke, didn't go out with her friends, made sure my clothes were always washed, knew how to mend things. She is.
How does she feel about the fact that both her boys are in this serious legal jeopardy?
Well, you have to understand, she's known us our entire lives, mm-hmm. and you haven't. You know, when I was 15, 16, 18, all my friends were selling drugs and breaking into cars. I was down at the kickboxing gym every single day. I would get into the kickboxing ring for 50 pounds after mm-hmm. 8 weeks training, just because I found harmony in the discipline that sport gave me. I think kickboxing is massively, largely responsible for keeping me from ever doing anything illegal. Never tried a drug in my life. Never broken a law in my life.
Never broken any law.
I was speeding. Right. You know, if you, I mean, we're talking. I'm talking about serious crimes. And my mother's known that even at my most desperate and my most poor, I would come home to her and sleep on her couch for 6 months, as opposed to do anything illegal and try to find an honest, good way of legal way at least of making money. So the
is she
idea.
She worried about you, the situation you're in?
Well, she's not. She's worried about the situation, but she has no doubt in her mind that I haven't done any heinous things against women, especially for money, because it doesn't make sense that after going through what I've gone through and avoiding any legal problems, suddenly I'm worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and I decide that's the time to start trafficking.
When you look at this whole setup of the war room and the generals and the, I think Andrew said 4,000 people are members now.
Yes.
When I saw the web chat logs and so on, he says a lot of that isn't true. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see whether that's verified or not. But a lot of the language that's used seems to be that people are being encouraged to spend all this money to join a kind of cult where they are encouraged to treat women as second-class citizens.
Absolutely not true. One, I don't know.
But that's what comes over in these
logs. I believe the screenshots you've seen are fake.
All of them.
Absolutely. Two, I would say I'm a member of the war room. The war room has nothing to do with me. I'm just a war room member like everybody else. Mm. And I find lots of great help within the war room, within whenever I want to do business with somebody, if I want to transfer money to certain countries, if I want to, you know, find somebody who has talents that I don't, to recruit people, to find people to work for me. That's what I use the war room for. I don't think any network in the world would exist where men sit around and just complain about women and try and treat women as second-class citizens. I mean, surely it would
be complaining about them.
I wouldn't want to take part.
It's more like there's one of the running themes is to get the woman to tattoo your name on herself.
That's clearly not true. What you've read is fake, and it's made up by stupid journalists.
There's 12,000 pages of it.
There's 12,000 pages. Well, it doesn't matter. It's very easy to find some chat logs and enter little lines into it. I don't think that
it's also very easy to say, yeah, a bit of it was done.
Here's the thing. If 4,000 people are talking across hundreds of different rooms 24 hours a day right now, since the beginning of our interview, probably 300, 400, 500 messages have been sent inside the war room, I can't tell you exactly what everyone has said over the last 4 years and what they haven't said. Mm. I can't. What I'm saying is, in my experience inside of the war room, that is absolutely not what the war room stands for. Absolutely not what the war room teaches, preaches, what anyone I know from the war room believes. All the people I know from the war room are happily married men, guys with families, guys with kids, successful businessmen, people who run construction companies, real, honest, great people, and that does not represent us. So I think it's fake.
You guys have preached a message of masculinity, and I'm all in favor of masculinity.
Great.
Many other people have categorized it as toxic masculinity because of the misogyny and so on. Do you feel that maybe you have collectively gone too far in the misogyny, and that has been, again, one of the reasons you find yourself in the problems you're in?
Well, again, when I say, first
of all, the kind of alpha male rhetoric.
What have I said that's misogynistic?
No, I'm just asking you generally whether you feel that's part of the problem.
I don't think that's part of the problem. I don't think it is a problem at all. I think that when somebody has been speaking on the internet for a decade, you have to understand that, first of all, lots and lots of content is produced, and it's very easy to cherry pick and to take things out of context.
Sure.
And number two, the man speaking on the internet 10 years ago is not the man sitting in being interviewed by you today. Mm. You know, who I was when I was 25, I fancied myself a bit of a dating coach, used to give people advice on how to meet women and how to pick. That's not how I live now. I'm 35, I'm not 25. You at 25, I'm sure, were very vastly different than you are today. So, you know, I don't think there's a problem with anything I've said, because I've never advocated for anything illegal. I've never advocated for any crime. I do not advocate for drugs. I do not advocate for violence. I do not advocate for any of these things. So if Andrew said that women can't drive as well as men once, like, it's very easy to jump on that and say this man is the world's biggest misogynist because he said X. And I think
He said a lot worse things than that. I do think
that was the original reason he went viral.
I do think he said a lot of blatantly misogynist things. I don't think he's even really aware. I don't think he even thinks they are misogynist.
Well, that depends on your worldview, and it actually depends on the worldview of where you live. Because if you were to walk around the country of Romania, the great country of Romania, and you were to talk to people and say some of the misogynistic things you've heard, Andrew, me, anyone else in the world, say in England that are considered misogyny, the men and the women here would be like, yeah, Huh? What? Misogynistic? What? What's like?
Yeah, that's not a very good defence.
Well, no, it's not.
The fact that other countries.
I'm not trying to defend myself.
The fact that other countries tolerate it.
No, I'm not trying to defend myself, but the man should go out and work and the woman should stay home and take care of the family. This is my point. So in England, that's for some reason makes people's heads explode when I say that's how I want to live. I'm happy. I'm not saying.
You're perfectly entitled to live how you like.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you guys have made millions and millions of pounds out of preaching that message. And the criticism is that young, impressionable teenage boys in particular have been led to believe by you guys that the only way to succeed in life is with that dynamic.
No.
Where the man's in charge, he's the hunter, he's the provider, the woman stays at home, she makes herself look good, and her only whole modus operandi each day, a whole raison d'etre, is to get up and make her man feel good.
I'm going to correct you, because I think you're completely wrong about what me and Andrew preach. What me and Andrew preach is a message of masculine excellence. And when you are an excellent man, when you are strong, smart, sharp, all of the things that we tell young men to be, discipline, then you can find a wife and a woman and a life and a dynamic, four wives if you like, and live exactly how you want.
Oh, sure.
I don't tell, yeah,
no
and,
question.
You, and you can have a wife who's more successful
but
than you.
You, do
you
both,
can date
but,
a judge or a
you
lawyer
do
or a
both
doctor.
Basically believe women should stay at home and not go to work.
No, I believe that I want my woman at home with my family, sure. And that's the way I wish to live.
However, that's also what you preach. That's also what you preach in your university, right? I mean, you think
I don't preach anything inside of any university.
Right. Well, okay.
No, the university. Sorry, if you're talking about the real world, the online educational platform, which has been attacked and slandered more than me. Keep in mind, I don't own it. It's been slandered and attacked and said that it teaches people how to abuse women. What kind of app would teach people how to abuse women? It's insane. It teaches web design, e-commerce, copywriting, cryptocurrency trading, basic methods of wealth creation, and that's it. It actually has nothing to do with teaching anyone anything about women.
Well,
to the point that women are members.
The war.
Loads of members.
What about the war room?
Well, the war room doesn't have female members. No, I can explain why that is if you care, but I don't think it's that interesting of a reason. Well, I would say that I don't have, or my brother, or any of the men in the war room don't have any business telling women how to be women. You see, we're not misogynists. If we were to get women into a group and say, hey, women, you need to be like this, you need to be like that, no.
Andrew tells women how they should be all the time, including
a lengthy tweet I read to him.
It was only last week, and that's my point.
I read
the whole tweet for a reason.
Yes.
It went on and on and on, and honestly, it was just blatantly misogynist.
Yeah, but people can take that or leave it. This is Twitter, that's a public
forum. But it doesn't make it not misogyny.
Well, if you consider it misogynistic.
And here's where your massive reach and influence becomes problematic to me, because I see on the streets when I walk around in London in particular, the number of kids who come up to me all starry-eyed about the Tate brothers, right? Mm. And they're like, you know, top G and blah, 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 blah. But they're being conditioned to think by the constant rhetoric, mainly from Andrew, but I don't think you're particularly that different in your worldview of how women's place in the world should be, that they're led to believe that if a woman wants to go to work, there's something wrong with that. And we're in a very different place now to where we were in the 50s. You know, a lot of women love going to work, love their jobs, they're successful. Often they may be the main breadwinner in the family, right? The whole dynamic has changed. There's no suggestion that there's a repeated pattern of women that go to work, they have unhappy marriages or lives or unhappy children.
No, but I believe society's gotten much worse in the last 30, 40 years.
Because of women going to work?
No, not because of women going to work, because of men losing the agency to discipline the children in the household and to be seen as the figurehead. Now, that's my personal opinion, and if you find it misogynistic, that's completely fine. But I will say that on places like Twitter, what I won't do is get any young man personally or speak with young men personally in a personal conversation and say, hey, you need a woman who you can control and can't go to work and stuff. That is absolutely not what we do. I think Ricky Gervais made a very interesting point about putting something on Twitter and people taking it personally like it's written for them. Mm. It's not written for them. Andrew can live the way he wants to live. And let me tell you, me and Andrew live in very different ways in regards to the way we see relationships, etc., because we are both very different people. But he can live the way he wants to live because, one, him and his girlfriend are both consenting adults, and that's their prerogative. Two, he's achieved a level of success and masculine excellence where he has the choice of picking which type of women he wants to date. I like different types of women. You've achieved masculine excellence yourself, Piers, and you, I'm sure, have a very happy relationship with whichever woman is in your life.
Yeah, but I do believe masculinity is important.
Great.
I don't like the way it's always constantly reframed as toxic.
Great, we agree.
But I do think that the constant stream of misogynist statements, but I'm talking mainly about Andrew, but the constant stream of them, I'm not even sure he's aware of how they come over. That was clear from our interview.
Yeah, well, again, people could take what's put on Twitter and they can either apply it to their lives or not. They could take it personally or not. I don't know how many followers Andrew has on Twitter. Millions. Millions and millions of people.
8.2 million.
He's not writing it aimed at women or aimed at men or aimed at anybody.
Well, he is.
He's voicing his own opinions about how he lives his life.
Yeah, but to a massive audience. To a massive audience.
Yeah, to a massive audience,
and then you guys do your YouTube stuff, and that has a massive audience.
We're on Rumble, not YouTube. YouTube,
I'm sorry, you're banned from YouTube, right? But you're on Rumble, you're banned from some platforms, you're allowed on, but you're allowed back on Twitter and so on.
Indeed.
I just think it's, for me, when I look at all the rhetoric, the stuff that I find most problematic, to use the phrase of the buzz phrase of our era,
absolutely,
is simply where I feel like if it strays into that misogyny, I think you let yourselves down. That you have a good message in many ways. You know, a lot of the stuff, notwithstanding the serious charges you're facing, and we'll have to see how that all plays out. And maybe you both are very different people to the ones you're claiming to be. We'll find out, right? But in terms of your general rhetoric, I find that constant running underpinning theme of misogyny and about where a woman's place should be, that is the problem in terms of the influence on young men. They shouldn't all be walking around thinking that a woman's place is only in the home serving their men. And that somehow their only thought process each day, women, should be, how do I please my man, not can I get a fulfilling job or any of those things. But no, you stay at home, self-improvement, make yourself look good, obey his instructions, all that kind of stuff.
But Andrew talking about the way that he wants his relationships to work.
He's entitled.
He's not advocating and forcing the whole world to see things his way.
Yeah, but that's the delusion because...
You
can say he only wants that for himself, right?
And by the way,
he's allowed any relationship he wants. But when do you pretend that when he says those things, they're not amplified to literally tens of millions of impressionable young men.
But here's why you're wrong.
Then you know that's not true.
Well, here's why you're wrong, because you assume that Andrew Tate, for some reason, in this conversation, is the only influencer in the world and the only person people listen to. Because he's not at all.
Not at all.
The internet.
I'm going to tell you, he's one of the most influential.
Yeah, no, he absolutely is. And that's great.
And that's the part of his influence that I think is a potentially malevolent.
Great, and it's wonderful and good. And you don't have to like it. But let me tell you, every force has an equal and opposite force somewhere else. Mm. So on X, Elon has now legalized free speech on that platform. Mm. So there are differing opinions on every single aspect of life, including how you want to date women, what kind of music you should listen to, what kind of cars are good, whatever it is. So for every Andrew Tate out there, there's some feminist OnlyFans model who lives in Florida who makes rap music who's saying that men are nothing and men aren't shit. So the people who are listening to Andrew Tate aren't listening to Andrew Tate. They're listening to the internet as a whole. And I believe Andrew's message is one, overwhelmingly positive, absolutely overwhelmingly positive. And I believe he's a very important mark on that spectrum of opinions that exist out there, because when you delete Andrew Tate, the mean average of people will drift down this toilet of degeneracy and become less like Andrew Tate. He's a professional athlete with a completely clean criminal record, by the way, who's massively financially successful, who's kind, who's generous. He runs his own charity. He's the best brother. He's the best father. He's the best uncle. He's an absolutely wonderful man, and I would love to see more men become like him. So I like his opinions, and I like the fact that he's out there.
Tristan Tate. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.